B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Legendary Deep Purple bassist Roger Glover is my guest today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Their new record, Whoosh, comes out on August 7th. He told me about Bob Ezrin and how that legendary producer has helped the band to kind of focus and write new material.
Meeting Bob Ezrin changed everything 8 years ago. He came to see us play in Toronto, and we had a meeting with him the next morning, and he just said some great stuff, and he sort of encouraged us to be us.
He talks about his thoughts looking back on their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as well as the legendary song Smoke on the Water. And how about Perfect Strangers? That record came out after a Deep Purple hiatus, and he wasn't sure if it would work.
Well, we didn't know if we had anything to offer, as a matter of fact. I wasn't sure that it was a good idea at all, because what happened in the 70s was so amazing that it was the product of its time. And then to try and expect that to do it all over again in the 80s, I thought wishing a bit too far.
Then That Metal Show's Don Jameson checks in. I guess you can actually watch That Metal Show now online.
Yeah, I guess they released some of the old episodes now. So if you go to VH1.com, they're, I don't think they had any episodes, or maybe just one season. So now apparently they have a whole bunch, so people could go over there and rewatch some of the old ones.
Oh, man, this comment was unfortunate.
I haven't gotten laid in a while.
And more gems with Don Jameson. Roger Glover from Deep Purple is up first on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
I'm excited. Never talked to a member of Deep Purple now that I think about it. Man, I don't think I have. This will be a first. Roger Glover today from Deep Purple. We talk about the brand new record. I go back and visit some classics like Smoke on the Water and Perfect Strangers. And I don't know if you know this or not, but he actually produced a bunch of records in the 70s and 80s, one of which was Judas Priest's Joan Baez cover, Diamonds and Rust. So I had to ask him about that one. And that all comes up here in a little bit. And then, of course, rock and roll comedian and overall good dude Don Jameson joins us as well. And if you check out the link in the bio, that's the link to where you can get his record. He's actually personalizing and autographing records. I guess he's only selling 100 of them. So check the link in the description of the show for that kind of stuff. In the meantime, we'll get things rolling here with Roger Glover. Deep Purple's 21st studio album, Whoosh, is coming out on August 7th. And I started off the conversation. I don't know if you guys realize how this works, but with a person like Roger Glover, like I don't know him or whatever, they put out this email and they say, hey, do you want to talk to Roger Glover? And then radio guys or media people from around the country and perhaps, I guess, around the world actually respond, and they give you certain times. I always request the latest time, especially when these things start at like 9 o'clock in the morning, because I don't go on the radio till 3 p.m. And so I want to get, you know, the latest time. And plus it gives you a little bit more leeway where you're not worried about the next person, because I don't like to make people run over as far as their times are concerned. So when there's nobody else after me, I always like, yeah, it gives you, frees you up just a little bit as far as that's concerned. So the first thing I had to ask Roger was, what is it like to just talk about yourself all morning and answer questions about you?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love talking about myself.
Yeah. I can imagine. But, yeah, you got...
The only thing is, you know, you don't know the answer. I don't ask myself the questions I get asked. So it's just a question of finding out what I really think. It's actually quite illuminating.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you find out a little bit more about yourself just by talking to other people asking you questions about you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got this, the new record, the 21st studio album, Whoosh, is coming out. And talk about this record, talk about releasing it during a pandemic, and talk about new Deep Purple in 2020. I know it's a lot of questions right there, but give me your thoughts on all that.
Yes, three bags full and yes.
Yeah.
Well, it was recorded last year, actually, so the COVID thing didn't come into it, although I have to say some of the lyrics kind of have a disturbing kind of connection. Whoosh, 21st album, 50 years in the making. Yeah, every album is potentially our last album. We thought the last album was the last album, but, you know, there's another one. So we just keep going. Like, I remember John Lord once described Deep Purple as, an atomic toy. It just keeps going, yeah. anyway, meeting Bob Ezrin changed everything 8 years ago. He came to see us play in Toronto, and we had a meeting with him the next morning, and he just said some great stuff, and he sort of encouraged us to be us. You don't need to write anything that you think people are going to expect. Just stretch out and be yourselves. And that was, you know, great advice. And making the album was such a joy. And now we've done through with him, and they've all been a lot of fun. We don't start an album with any kind of plan. It just happens, like life.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Jamming session. We jam for about 8-9 days, something like that, and come up with a bunch of stuff and then pick and choose what we want to work on, and it goes from there. And it sort of evolves. You know, we don't write songs. We just let them evolve because the five of us are all throwing bits and pieces in towards it. And we record very together. We record all together in the same room. We don't layer stuff. We're a live band, and so we play live in the studio.
Yeah, and I suppose that working with Bob, I mean, like you just said, kind of got you guys back in and really in the writing mood. I've heard a few songs so far from it. Throw My Bones, I remarked on my notes here that just the guitar solo, just the way it builds up is just killer. Man Alive, I heard with that spoken word part throughout it, and I just heard Nothing at All just this morning. So there's three songs right there off the record. What are some of your favorites off of it?
Well, it changes day to day, actually.
Yeah.
Nothing at All. I love the track. I love everything about that. It's great. Power of the Moon, I like. But you haven't heard that yet, right?
No, I haven't heard that one, no.
It's quite a varied album. I don't know if there's an unconscious thought that if this is going to be our last album, we wanted to touch a lot of different styles. But it certainly wasn't spoken about. It just might have been an unconscious thought. But it does have a lot of variety to it, yeah.
You keep mentioning the last album, and I know that you're kind of being a little bit facetious, but I mean, how much more gas does Deep Purple have in the tank?
Well, it hasn't hit empty yet.
Yeah.
I don't know quite what's going to happen, but because of the COVID thing and we can't tour, then, yeah, we might do another album. I can't tell you that for sure yet.
The other day, my son brought home this guitar, and it's so funny because I was thinking about this as I was getting ready to talk to you that, he said to me, he goes, "Hey, Dad, I learned a song," and my son is 17, and you know the song he learned.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And he wanted to know something else. Dimebag Darrell and Vinnie Paul from Pantera, who are both gone now, told me one day in the studio that they learned that song. They learned Smoke on the Water, the first song they ever learned. And they said that 6-minute song turned into a 6-hour jam session with those guys.
So. Yeah, it's one of those riffs. You know? And the strange thing is, it came from nowhere. Yeah, I mean, Richie played it, of course. I know it came from him. But when the fire stopped us recording in the casino in Montreux, we decamped to another small theater nearby, and we'd only managed to do one backing track. It was a quick jam, and that was that riff. And while we were recording it, which must have been about 1 o'clock in the morning, the police were at the door trying to stop us because we were keeping the whole town awake. So by the time we'd continued, it was like 5 days later, we were in this grand hotel, closed down place. We recorded in the corridor there, and we were short of a song. We said, "Well, let's go back. What's that thing we did in the other place?" And that coupled with I came up with the title "Smoke on the Water" the morning after the fire. Just said it in my sleep, and then woke up. And I actually said it out loud. "Smoke on the Water." Wow. But then we sort of looked. We needed this song, so why don't we just write what happened to us here? Coming to make a record and call it "Smoke on the Water." And it was a sort of also ran in the studio on the album, and then to have it turn out to be what it is now, it's nothing short of phenomenal.
And then looking back on this, you were inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 5 or 6 years ago. Looking back on it now, what are your thoughts about the Rock Hall and your induction?
Well, having been turned down twice, we kind of got used to the fact that we really didn't want it. We didn't want it anyway. We never thought about it. That's not our goal. Doing what we do is our goal. That's the goal. If someone wants to recognize it in an award or something like that, then that's the icing on the cake. But it's not that important to us. So after we'd been turned down twice, when it finally came, we actually considered refusing it. would get more publicity out of refusing it than accepting it. But then we came to the conclusion. He said, "Well, Ian Gillan said to us, it's not for us. It's for the fans. It's for the family and friends, and especially the fans. That's who it's important for, and we should do it." So we did.
Yeah, that's great. A couple more things here for you, because I know I'm running short on time, but I was listening to Perfect Strangers yesterday, and that record came out when I was just a kid, just getting into rock and roll, and that, to me, is my favorite record, and you guys had taken that big, long hiatus before you wrote it and stuff. Just talk real briefly about reinventing the band back in the mid-'80s.
Well, we didn't know if we had anything to offer, as a matter of fact. I wasn't sure that it was a good idea at all, because what happened in the 70s was so amazing that it was the product of its time, and then to try and expect that to do it all over again in the 80s, I thought was wishing a bit too far. But we had the meeting, first time in 11 years, all five of us were around the same table, and the first thing we wanted to do was to play together, to see if there's something still there, and that was a key moment. And so we went to a rehearsal place, we went to the house up in Vermont, and I remember so well the first jam we did together. It was magic. It was like putting on a pair of old gloves. It felt so natural. And we said, let's do it. That was the key. Let's do it there. And we actually recorded it in that place as well with a mobile. It was a cellar. It was a basement in a cellar. It was actually a useless place to try and make a record, but somehow we did it.
That's one of my favorites. I love that record still to this day. And final thing here for you. I know that you produced a lot of records and stuff back in the day, but how did you talk Judas Priest into covering that Joan Baez song, Diamonds and Rust?
I didn't. They wanted to do it.
They wanted to. Okay.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons why they asked me is because they heard Nazareth's song. Well, it's not Nazareth's song. It's a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight, which is a big hit for Nazareth. And I produced that, and in fact arranged it. They wanted to do it a sort of Rod Stewart and the Faces type, boogie kind of thing. I said, no, if you're going to do a beautiful song like that, you need a good arrangement. And so I arranged it, and it was a big hit. And Judas Priest had that in mind. He said, can you do something like that with this song? And so that's how it came about.
Yeah, you haven't produced anything in a while, have you?
No, not really. I mean, I've been pretty busy.
Yeah.
With Deep Purple. Most of the productions that I did, most people know of anyway, were done in the 70s. A few bits and pieces in the 80s. Of course, got involved with Rainbow. I was producing Rainbow. And then Purple, a couple of albums. And then I've been working solid ever since. To do a production, you need to set aside a good 3 months to get to know the material, get to know the band, go to the rehearsals, whatever.
Gotcha.
So,
yeah.
I didn't have 3 weeks free, let alone 3 months.
Well, Roger, real pleasure to talk to you. 21st studio album, like I mentioned, Whoosh is just about to be dropped here, and good luck with that. And hopefully, we'll see you down the road somewhere on a stage somewhere near us.
Well, I hope so too. We live in hope.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Roger, have a great day. Thank you so much for the time.
Not at all. Thank you for the time. It's very important. I appreciate it. Thanks. Bye-bye.
There you go. Roger Glover today on the Talking Rock with the Meltdown Podcast. And how cool is that, just talking to a legend like that? It was wild to hear him talk about Smoke on the Water and how it just came to him like practically in a dream. But anyways, I found this clip, so check this out. This is the late Vinnie Paul and the late Dimebag Darrell on my show. I want to say this was January of 2004. And I asked them what was the first song they ever jammed. And this is the response.
First song we ever did was Smoke on the Water, and it started off like... And that's about a 6-minute song if you take the album version, but for us it was about a 6-hour song. We just played it over and over and over. Like, yeah!
So cool to hear VP's voice right there again and Dimebag. It was so funny when I was interviewing those guys, that day. I always knew this, but man, those guys were like... They were thick as thieves, man, just two peas in a pod. And I always felt, and I've talked about this before, and I've asked actually people just recently, I think maybe Johnny Kelly or somebody, I asked him, I said, it's funny how, when Dime was gone, Vinny always seemed to just be missing a huge part of him. And he didn't bring it up or talk about it or stuff like that, but it was just like, you could just tell, like, he was just missing a big part of who he was. So, anyways, there you have it. That's that clip that I was talking about with Roger Glover there.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Let's talk to Don Jameson, see what he's up to. Hey, Don, how's things, man?
I got up this morning, I cranked some Iron Maiden, and so my day got off to a good start.
There you go. Never bad when you're dying with your boots on, I suppose. That was one of the theme songs when I played hockey yesterday that they were playing before we played, so...
I don't think we should be having songs about dying during the pandemic, but it is a motivator.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I didn't even think about this till you just mentioned that, but how are you missing life on the road?
Yeah. Show me a comedian with no gigs and I'll show you somebody who should be in therapy immediately.
Yeah.
You know, I have nowhere to get like all this pent up anger out. You know, usually that's where it happens on the stage, and you know, I yell at the audience for 45 minutes, and then I'm like, okay, I'm good.
So I've talked to a lot of bands, obviously, that are, you know, just sitting at home doing whatever. And a lot of bands, some say they're kind of flush with creative ideas, and some say, it's just not happening. So are you writing stuff down? Are you preparing to record another record when this all ends, or what are you doing?
A band, the one thing the band has is that, you know, they can rehearse, you know, and they can write and work songs out, even if it's virtually. Yeah, I'm a comic. I write jokes. Like, where am I working them out? I can't stand in front of the mirror with a hairbrush and, you know, talking to the brush.
Right, right.
You know, like, what am I going to say? Hey, Lamp, how you doing tonight? You know.
Where are you from?
So, yeah, right, yeah, you're from here. I bought you, like, 3 weeks ago at Target. There's nowhere for me to work it out. So as soon as we get up and running with the gigs, I got a couple outdoor ones booked. But, until they really come back in full force, I have no way to figure out if any of this stuff is good.
Now, what have I seen recently about that metal show? Is VH1 showing them on demand or something?
Yeah, I guess they released some of the old episodes now. So if you go to VH1.com, they're I don't think they had any episodes, or maybe just one season. So now apparently they have a whole bunch, so people could go over there and rewatch some of the old ones. But yeah, I don't know why for years that they didn't have them up there. So not that we make any money on it, but you know, for people who missed the show, which we always appreciate, the fans still, you know, ask us all the time about it. So so they're there now, and go back, and now's a good time, right? You go binge watch some that metal shows.
So we were just talking about this before we started recording about how, like, you know, you're doing your own show. Give your show a plug there.
Yeah, it's called That Jameson Show, and it's on compoundmedia.com. And it's been a great run. I guess, you know, one of the good things, because all the musicians are home now, is, you know, I'm getting tons of interviews, and, you and I are probably fighting for guests now, you know. had Coverdale on, and Alice Cooper, and, you know, Glenn Hughes, and... it's been I had Klaus from the Scorpions on, all guys that you've talked to, and these guys are wanting to get out and do interviews now, which is good. So give me a call.
It's tough to kind of draw stories out of Alice Cooper. He's kind of, you know, he tends to stay in his shell.
There was one specific story that I wanted him to tell because I love the story, and I've heard him tell it before. So I tried to, you know, ask him questions to get him to tell that story. And I see his eyes light up like, okay, I got the story for this. And then he tells a completely different story than the one I wanted him to, but it was still great. Right.
No, you know, Damon Johnson's a friend of ours, right? And I never yeah. forget Damon said, you know, he would go golfing with Alice all the time. And they'd, you know, Callaway reps and, you know, different dignitaries would go golfing with him. And Damon said Alice would tell the same story all the time but change it. And he said to him, he says, yeah, Damon, never let the facts get in the way of a good story. So.
Exactly. But, yeah, Alice is one of the best storytellers. And you know what I like about him, man, is he, you know, He doesn't come all gangbusters in promotional mode. Like, he'll sit there, he'll give you the stories, and then when it's time to plug what he's got to plug, then he goes into it. But other than that, yeah, it's just like talking to somebody who's just got the best rock and roll stories ever.
No question, and he's been sober for a really long time, so he remembers a lot of them.
That's true, yeah, except he did have that period he calls out the there's like four albums he calls the Blackout album.
Right, in the early 70s, yeah.
Well, like in the, like towards the, like right at the end of the 70s, okay. Actually, because after he got out of rehab, then he was in demand again. Like, people were like, oh, good, you know, we want Alice's back. So to keep up with the demand, he started doing coke. He wasn't drinking anymore, but now he was doing coke, which he thought was an okay substitute. And then he made these crazy albums like Dada and Zipper Catches Skin. And he doesn't remember doing any of them. But,
yeah, so that was after the Alice Cooper band. And then he became Alice Cooper, and that's when that all kind of started happening, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, and then, but yeah, he's been clean for 35 years or something. So, yeah, I mean, and it's great because you see the guys he's mentored over the years, like Rob Zombie and people like that, who are not, you know, who are like the new gentlemen of, you know, hard rock and metal, and then they pass it down to the next generation. So, you know, that's what we need good dudes on the scene, and we got a lot of them.
And you had David Draiman on the other day. How'd that go from Disturbed?
Yeah, another guy. You know, he became, like, after Lars, he became the heavy metal whipping boy, right, for the 2000s. You know, he catches so much heat, you know, because he's opinionated, but he really is a good guy, man. And the thing I loved about the interview is I actually pre-recorded it in my house. And it just had this, like, this feel of, like, just two friends catching up on FaceTime. You know, mm-hmm. Like, there's no big intro to it. It was like the interview just starts out, hey, brother, how you doing? I'm okay. Well, you know, how good can anybody be these days? Yeah, I hear you, man. How's the fan? You know, it was just a really, I love that, the tone of the conversation, because it really was just like, hey, let's catch up for a few minutes. Oh, and you know, I'll air it on my show. So, I think people see a different side of David that way.
Yeah, David's always been one of these guys where, you know, it depends, I guess, how well you know him. I've interviewed him a handful of times, met him a bunch of times, you know, but he's real deliberate and he's very thoughtful and he's really smart. So you got to kind of prepare when you're going to talk to him, because he'll call you out if you're wrong.
Oh, yeah, totally. And that's the thing. I don't know David that well. Again, I'm like, you know, he did that metal show. I've seen him backstage a few times and hung with him and said hi. I know the guys in his band better. But the vibe of it was like two friends just catching up. And I like that, man. You know, I think that's that was comforting to me, man, to, you know, especially in these times of chaos.
Yeah, another guy who's reminds me a lot of David when you interview him is Dave Mustaine.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of the same kind of way. He's a little bit intimidating. He's very smart, yeah. And he'll let you know if you're wrong.
Right. Well, Dave, yeah, and Dave's, you know, years ago, Dave gave me his email. And he said, hey, man, you know, you ever need anything, let me know. You know, and I was like, well, you know, well, I'm not, you know, I'm never going to use this, right? But, you know, it's cool. I have, you know, Dave Mustaine's email. And when I did, you know, not my most recent comedy album, but the one before it, I was like, you know what? I never bug Dave. I go, and I always have, like, a metal guitar player do the intro to my album. So I just sent him an email and said, hey, I was thinking about you, and how you doing? How's the family? Hey, by the way, would you be into laying down a riff for my new comedy album? And 10 minutes later, he wrote back, sure, no problem. I was like, I didn't know what to expect back from him. Like, yeah, don't use this email anymore, or leave me alone, or whatever. But he 10 minutes later, he's like, whatever you need, let me know. And he copied his production manager. And within a couple of days, I had it. So, Dave's always been good people, man. And I'm excited for the new Megadeth because it sounds like it's going to be killer.
Yeah, what's funny is I've become really good friends with David Ellison. And that dude, I don't know if there's a guy who's working harder than him now during this COVID thing. He's constantly doing something.
Yeah, he's got, you know, new bass, a new album, a new single, a new, you know.
He's doing a cover record coming out. Yeah, he did Megadeth. I mean, it's like this guy doesn't stop.
Well, yeah, well, he's drinking his all his Ellison coffee.
That's right. That's probably true. So what else you been doing during this this time down, I guess?
Crying.
Yeah.
Crying. I've been on my you're the big shot motorcycle rider. I'm more of a bike guy. I live by the beach here in Jersey. So just been out on my bike a lot since the weather's been nice, and trying to, you know, not completely fall apart. And like you said, riding a lot, and you know, pretty much every, you know, live stream kind of thing, you know, anybody asks me to do, I'm doing those things, and just trying to, you know, listening to tons of music, man, just, you know, tons and tons of stuff. So yeah, that's it, man. Just trying to enjoy the sunshine.
Yeah, I've got 863 miles on my street bike this year, my bicycle.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you bike as well, besides motorcycle.
Yeah. So I'll get out there on my two wheels and do 20 or 30 miles and then, you know, call it a day. But so you said tons of music. So have you bought any albums lately?
Well, you know, it's funny, too, because obviously I prepare for my show every week. So that, you know, that's where I've been also listening to a lot of music. You know, I got it when it first came out on vinyl, and I just listened to it again yesterday because I have Dax Nielsen coming up on my show. But that last Cheap Trick album, man, is freaking amazing.
Really? Okay.
We're All Right, it's called, which obviously is, you right. know, a throwback to a song lyric of theirs. But, dude, it's seriously one of the best Cheap Trick albums ever.
Really? All right, I'll have to check that out. I got I have the new Avatar ordered, and apparently that's not going to be until August 7th. And I'm the kind of person where, like, the record's out, but I don't want to listen to it. I want to listen to it on my turntable when it comes out. I want to listen to it all the way through.
Right. Yeah, I'm the same way. But I have the Cheap Trick on the vinyl, and man, it's really, really good. I can't wait to talk to Dax about it because, you know, most people don't know Cheap Trick has still been putting out, you know, new music. You know, they really never stopped. So it's amazing for these bands to be this far in their career and still be putting out great stuff. Like, I'd put that album up against any of their albums. And I've been discovering some new bands. You know, I really like this band called Broken Love.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's BRKN.
Right, right.
They don't like syllables for some reason, or vowels, whatever.
Right. Syllables.
I apparently don't like English that well, but those guys are young and pretty damn good, man.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the last, like, new album I got. I know that there's been a couple recently. I did buy reissued copies of the Clash's. The big Clash album, and then I bought the Oasis record, What's Your Story, Morning Glory. I thought that's pretty good. I've actually bought a couple. I bought a really, really good copy of George Harrison's All Things Must Pass a couple of months ago. I've actually bought copies lately. Are you like me where when you really like a record and you're going through a record store and you find a really good copy of one that you just buy it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I just did that because, you know, I was out in Vegas last week hanging with Brian Slagle from Metal Blade, and they actually have a Metal Blade store out there, and they sell tons of vinyl in there, not just Metal Blade stuff, like everything. But I bought two copies of like the Vandenberg album that I had from way back, and I couldn't remember if I had them, but I'm like, they're $6, and
right.
Like they don't have a scratch on them, so let me just get them just in case. So I bought those, and I bought an Amon Amarth album. I bought one of the old Metal Blade the compilation albums that Brian used to do back in the day. So, I picked up some cool stuff. And one of mine and your favorite albums has just come out on vinyl. And that's Don Jameson's Denim and Laughter.
It didn't really? Nice.
Yeah.
Man, where can people get that?
So I'm selling only 100 copies, and it's through, you know, Matt Sorum has this this vinyl store online. It's called experiencevinyl.com. And, yeah, he was cool enough to put this together and let me sell my vinyl on his at his spot. So experiencevinyl.com, you get a personalized signed album from me. And even if you don't know my comedy, buy it, you know, help a comedian buy some beer for the week.
Some Miller Lights.
That's right, baby.
Yeah, that's cool. So anything else happening in your world that we should know about?
I haven't gotten laid in a while.
I said that we should know about.
Well, that's, I mean, this is it all, you know, it's all part of the pent up anger. I have a gig this Friday that I'm, you know, excited and terrified for, because I haven't been on stage since March 13th. So it's almost like I don't know where to begin. But my heart really goes more out to the bands, man, because comics will start up a lot quicker than the bands will. You know, look, I'm not a scientist. I don't know anything about anything. But you tell me that this amount of people can gather here and that amount of people can gather over there for whatever reason, but 200 or 300 or 500 people can't gather and see a band play? I mean, you know, I don't get that. I mean, you're shutting these guys down. I mean, being in bands like owning a restaurant, you know, you're like, you're working week to week, paycheck to paycheck. You know, we've got to figure a way to get these guys back out there. And that's another thing, you know, I'm missing the shows. That's another place where now I don't jump in the mosh pit, but you know, again, you go see a good show. That's like therapy. You know, you kind of, you know, let the band, you know, get all your rage out of you. And we don't really have that, man. So, just missing that, man. That frees up a lot of time.
I feel for the bands, but I think I feel more for the road crew guys. Those guys, you know, they're obviously really living week to week in some instances. And, you know, some of them haven't worked now in 5 months, you know.
Dude, you hit the nail on the head, man. I'm glad you mentioned that, because you're right. And a lot of the artists that can afford to do it, or, you know, are really trying to spotlight them, like Lizzie Hale, you know. One of the first things she did was, you know, do a benefit for, you know, all the crew people. So, you know, that's why I always say we need good people in this business. And you see it get passed down, and somebody like Lizzie, you know, now she's passing it on to the next generation. And yeah, those guys, man, it just sucks, because, you know, those are the behind the scenes people that they don't get all the glory, but they're the people that make it happen. And you know, and me going out and having opened for bands and been on the tour bus, you know, these bands love their road crews. So yeah, shout out to the road crew.
Yeah. What was the last show you saw, by the way?
Well, the nice thing is the last show, quote unquote, that I saw was on the Monsters of Rock cruise. So I saw like 50 bands all at once.
Yeah, and that was in February.
Got erased.
January.
What
was that? January.
February.
Okay. So you just got in under the wire, because, yeah, my kids went on a cruise, too, around the same time, I think it was. But those were the last live acts you saw then, huh?
Yeah, I think the last live band I saw was Crocus. So.
Okay. There
you go. Which was, for me, that was exciting. Maybe not for a lot of other people, but, yeah, I love Crocus, man.
How many original guys are in that band?
I think two or three. I mean, it's not, they're not one of the, you know, not like one or like sort of one original members. It's like, no, I think they got the three main guys in there together. So, but yeah, it was good to get this overload of music in before, you know, before it just got completely shut down. So, I got my fill for a while, but, I'm aching for it, man. I just need a nice outdoor festival or something like that, man. We're definitely missing it.
Well, I guess you can have an outdoor festival if you call it like a protest. Then you can do
okay.
It.
Hey, listen, I'll paint the sign and get out there. Just give me some rock and roll, baby. Come on.
All right, DJ. Well, listen, man, thanks for calling in and checking in with us and seeing what's happening here. It's been a while. You were supposed to be the co-host on this show, but you've failed that miserably, so... You know.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I made a career on failing miserably, but somehow I'm still here. And no, I always appreciate, you know, the hang with you. And yeah, hope to hang in person again sometime in the near future. Let's get these gigs geared up again. But yeah, and we'll pop you on with on that Jameson show again soon.
Don Jameson and Roger Glover today in the Talkin' Rock with a Meltdown podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you've made it this far, give me a 5-star rating, Apple and iTunes, whole thing. You can write a review, do all that kind of stuff. Just there, you know, just search out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast on your Apple phone there and just give it a 5-star rating. Bam, just as simple as that. So, got some other artists I'm working on right now as far as this coming week. I got some irons in the fire, we'll just say, and we'll see what happens with that. I'm looking for a legendary Canadian lead singer coming up here before the end of the week as well. So check back often, subscribe if you get a chance, and share it with your buddies. Hey, thanks so much for checking out Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.